Canadian novelist Colin McAdam also created fiction out of the world of chimpanzees. He wrote a novel called A Beautiful Truth, and Steve Paulson recently caught up with him.
Colin, this novel is about how complicated relationships can get. It's also about the nature of love, about loneliness. It's about chimpanzees. Why did you want to write about chimps?
Well, I think as I was going through all of those complications in my own life, I started to wonder where they came from. One thing that really stood out early for me was the genetic facts, I guess. The fact that, you know, if you take two species of dolphin, you know, one a subspecies of the other, they have less in common with each other genetically than we do with chimpanzees.
Tell me about Louis, the central chimpanzee in your story. He's the chimp who's adopted. How does he fit into your novel?
Well, as I was learning all of these sort of facts about our connections with other apes, I realized that I really had to meet other chimpanzees. And so I went to a sanctuary that was near my house in Montreal at the time when I was writing this book, and this beautiful place called the Fauna Foundation, where a number of chimpanzees have been looked after for several years now, who were rescued from a biomedical lab and from zoos and other places. And meeting them was a life-changing experience in many ways.
What life-changing? In what way?
I think these questions of will and empathy, these things that we take for granted as humans, or at least that we celebrate as humans, that we think are unique to us, I saw in the flesh among chimpanzees. There was one whom I was particularly fond of named Pepper. We had a connection, I guess. We looked into each other's eyes and had a nice few moments. And I have a small mole on my left hand. And she tried to reach through the bars to groom that for me, to sort of get that little speck of dirt off my hand for me. And it was a charming moment at the time, but when I learned more about her history and when I drove her away from the place, I suddenly thought, this is just the most extraordinary thing that I've just been a part of.
There was something about that reaching across species. That was the thing that got to you?
Partly that, but more than that, it was witnessing a being who had been in a cage for 30 years, in her case, still willing to reach out to help her captor. In a sense, I mean, that's one way of looking at that moment. And, you know, for me, it sort of conjured thoughts of people like Nelson Mandela, people like that who have been through extraordinary things and somehow survive, and we celebrate them so roundly. And that's where Louis came from, really long answer.
Well, the central conceit of your story is that there is a couple in Vermont, Walt and Judy, who are desperate to have children, but they can't. So they adopt this chimpanzee, Louis, as kind of a way to fill this hole in their lives, and he turns their lives upside down. How would you describe Louis's life with this human couple, Walt and Judy?
Well, I based a lot of that side of the story on accounts I had read of similar situations. At the same time, I was in a house with a toddler, and, you know, it wasn't a great leap to imagine this household being turned upside down if you combine basically the behavior of a human toddler with the agility of a chimpanzee. You've got a pretty crazy situation. Louis had an insatiable appetite for playing, and because of the weather in Vermont, it often meant that diversions were required indoors. He loved hide-and-seek, but sometimes played it when others didn't know he was playing. He climbed onto the mantel one afternoon and watched as Judy walked around the house calling his name. Louis, it's time to clean up the dining room. Come on, my little man, my Louis. When she came around the corner, he leapt from the mantel onto her shoulders. She lost control of her bladder. He then walked to the bathroom, took toilet paper, and ran around the house, unraveling it and laughing. Judy's concern was not her own emotional state so much as how he reacted to it. When he saw her fear or anger, he got frightened himself and he would run around screaming, trying to find comfort where he could until he felt he could touch her or get a hug. They usually found such delight in seeing how much he could do, though. He learned by observation, by staring and remembering. He learned to crack eggs. You sit up on the counter there. He held the electric beater. He could spread butter on his toast with a knife. It was rarely done with grace or without a mess, but they imagined he would one day be more careful. He loved to wear Walt's Skidoo helmet, which was half the size of his body. He wore it backwards and walked into furniture. He laughed every time he hit something, and it was impossible not to laugh when he laughed. Larry saw him do this, and Walt said, "Do other animals laugh?"
That is great. And, I mean, it raises so many issues. As you say, there's something kind of childlike about Louis, and yet something utterly different as well. And you could just imagine that as Louis grows up, as he becomes a full-sized chimp, a wild animal, basically, a human household cannot contain him.
No. You know, if you combine the jealousies and politics and wants of children with a body that's 8 times stronger than a human adult, you know, there's inevitably going to be problems. It becomes frightening and dangerous. And I think most people know about Travis, for example, that chimpanzee who attacked a woman a few years ago.
She was badly mauled, right?
She was badly mauled, and it's a tragic story. You know, inevitably something will go wrong.
Now, I would think the challenge of writing a novel like this, where a chimpanzee is a major character in your story, is how do you create a character who doesn't have words?
Yeah, it was a challenge writing this thing. I'm kind of glad it's over in a way. When you look at the nature of apes, this issue of communication comes up, and we as humans sort of flatter ourselves for our linguistic abilities, and it's how we always define ourselves against what we call other animals. But the true nature of words and what we try to get from our words are really deeply embedded in ape nature. I see them as tools, and they come from the same place where in the brain where tool use is governed.
Well, you have kind of these alternating chapters in your novel where basically, the story is told from the chimp's point of view, and I would love to have you do a reading for us. I mean, one of the passages where you do tell the story from the chimp's point of view.
Sure. Well, this one that I thought I'd read comes at a point where a chimp named Jonathan is being introduced to a group of other chimps who are what we would call friends at this point. The other chimps are named Mama, Poto, and Mr. Ghoul. Mama liked Jonathan and wanted to look after him like her doll that had one ear. He had tremendous balls. He sat and pressed his balls against the plector, and Mama felt a strange flush of oh when she touched them through the grid. Poto and Jonathan screamed at each other from either side of the plector, and Poto tried to hit him. They were all kept apart from him until one day Dave put Mama in the room with Jonathan while Mr. Ghoul and Poto watched from the other side. Mama's rosé was pink as a mouth, and she let Jonathan clean her neck and pin her. Whoo! And Poto and Mr. Ghoul were hanging from the plector and screaming and mounting each other for comfort. When Jonathan hung from his side of the plector, he looked like a wall of thorns and threats. They soon emerged in the playroom together. Jonathan and Poto groomed each other after bloning and bluffing. And it was grooming like a conversation between men is a test, not a connection. It was touching like you touch a suspect tree, not to sit in it, but to see what it will take to push it down. Jonathan was bigger than Poto. Mama seemed to want to please him no matter what he did, and Mr. Ghoul and Poto wanted to please Mama. Mr. Ghoul would feel drawn as much as obligated to groom Jonathan because awful people are strangely compelling. Strange smells are sniffed at not once, but thrice.
That is great. I like the sound effects, too. Your book, A Beautiful Truth, is one of several novels that have come out in recent years that have fictionalized apes. And it strikes me that there's almost something in the zeitgeist here. Why do you think this is emerging as such a rich subject for fiction?
For me, it's such a fundamental part of who we are that to treat primatology, to treat chimpanzees as some sort of fringe concern seems all wrong to me. We don't question, you know, how many bloody vampire novels there are or books about enlightening texts in the Middle Ages that tell us secrets and all this sort of thing. We don't question that in the same way that we question why are there so many books about chimpanzees.
That's Colin McAdam talking with Steve Paulson about his novel, A Beautiful Truth.